today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
The forecast looks great for perfect pop week.
There ain't a cloud in sight. Okay, Patrick, so this was your idea. You thought that given the circumstances where everyone is, you know, stuck in their homes and just feeling kind of grouchy and frustrated and what have you right now, that maybe it was a good time to do something special this week, right?
That's right, Jim. I think our world, not just our country, needs perfect pop right now.
Yes.
We need to go back to something that will take us all away from our current reality, even if it's for 2 minutes and 50 seconds. So, you're welcome, America. You're welcome, the world. We're going to do perfect pop this week. Five shows, five episodes. Strap in.
Yes. We haven't done it in a while.
No.
It's been quite a long time. So we started off on this podcast doing perfect pop weeks and follow-ups from listeners and so on, and special guests. We would ask them. We did it with some regularity earlier on. Then we got older and we became irregular, I think. Yeah, it happens, right? And so
it does.
Yeah. And so you're absolutely right. This is the time. This is the time to do it now.
Yeah.
Perfect pop. Bring
it
on,
pull
right?
It out. Yeah. You know, I think all as a society are hoping there's some light at the end of the tunnel, or, you know, maybe we're just learning to live under these new conditions. But yeah, I think it's time for us to let our hair down, Jim, and dig into some songs that will never let you down, no
That's
matter
right.
what the situation.
We'll explain what the definition is here in a second. There really isn't much of one. First off, let's introduce ourselves. This show is Rockin' the Suburbs. If you're new because of Perfect Pop Week and you know it's like a big sweeps event, you're just coming into the show now. It's just two guys in our respective basements talking about music out in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. Usually we're together. We get together to record these, but because of obvious circumstances, last couple of months, we're doing these remotely. So that's that. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
There you go. But Perfect Pop is something we defined as just sort of a great song in popular music. It does not have to necessarily be like some strict definition of like pop song structure or anything like that. It's really just great music is what it is, but it's like a perfect song, right? It's a song that you just think really couldn't be any better than the way it was written and executed, right?
That's right, Jim. It's a perfect artistic creation, you know, that it may not be your perfect favorite song or your all-time song that you listen to when you're sad and curled up in the fetal position in the middle of the night and hoping for a song to come on the radio. Not that that's ever happened to me. And also, it's something we've done from the beginning and sort of defined. And, you know, I give you a lot of credit for kind of coming up with this concept. So loosely, Jim, what are the sort of criteria we use for this?
I think that's about it. Like I was saying, I think sometimes people get a little too hung up on the word pop and like, what does that mean? Is it supposed to be just like a you know, 2 minute, 50 second, you know, verse, chorus, verse song? No, it doesn't necessarily have to be that. It doesn't have to be, you know, peppy or snappy, like they say in That Thing You Do. It doesn't have to be like that. It can be a slow song. It can be a sad song. It can be a happy song. The point is just within the whole realm of popular music, it's just a perfect song, right? That's it.
That's right.
So what we're going to do for this week, we're going to do two songs per day. You and I are going to trade off picks throughout the week, but we're also going to include listeners because last time we did Perfect Pop, which is probably over a year ago, I want to say, we got some listener suggestions then, and I just kind of, you know, squirreled them away here in the basement, and I rooted through some things, and I found them. They were, you know, underneath some other, like, loose leaf papers and some, you know, various pieces of string and twine of different sizes, a bunch of cables of miscellaneous things. I don't even know what they go to anymore. But anyway, I found the Perfect Pop picks from listeners, and so we'll do one of those each day. Maybe not on Friday, but the other 4 days. I think we have four really good ones that we're going to go through this week.
Great.
All right?
I'm looking forward to it, Jim. I need to be, my batteries need to be recharged.
All right. Well, here you go. I'm going to kick us off with, I think, is a perfect pop song, I think, for the occasion as well.
Okay.
All right.
Don't you know, it's a beautiful day. Hey, blue sky. Please tell us why you had to hide away for so long. Why did we go wrong?
All right, there you go. Electric Light Orchestra with Mr. Blue Sky from 1977. Okay.
So fantastic, Jim.
So I thought that would brighten people's mood, right? Because that's a song that has been on my mind a lot lately as I think of sort of like Songs of Hope, which we've talked about. And it's just perfect like that. A couple things I'll get into here on the background of this a little bit, but there's not a great like deep meaning in this song. The song is pretty much what it says it is. It's about sort of, you know, that idea that like you go through a rough patch or a bad time or whatever, and then things get better. That's pretty much it. And I read in researching this that Jeff Lynne was basically inspired by the fact that he wrote the songs for this album Out of the Blue, which is a double album, by the way. Out of the Blue, he wrote this. This is a very like European British rock star thing. He holed himself up in a Swiss chalet so he could write. And one morning he got up and the sun was shining and it was a really beautiful day when the Swiss Alps, you know, and everything. And he was like, and it just inspired him to write just a happy, cheerful song about sort of renewal, right? And that idea of, you know, again, things getting better. So it's Mr. Blue Sky. But a couple things I want to say about why this song matters to me. One is, when I was a kid, I mean, a wee lad, 1977, I was just a little kid. I had this on 8-track, this album, Out of the Blue. And I can still remember the Christmas when I got a stereo for my bedroom. And that was a big deal that Christmas. And it was one of those stereos that was like, it wasn't components. It was like all in one.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
That's
like,
right.
Like it had a turntable and a radio and an 8-track player, no cassette, I don't think, 8-track player, all in like one unit, and then like the separate speakers, right? And we put that up in my room, and then being the like kid that I was, I would often listen on headphones because I didn't want my parents to hear, right? And so I would put in the 8-track of this Out of the Blue, which also has songs like Turn to Stone and Sweet Talking Woman, stuff like that. But this is a great headphones album. Like it's sonically, it's in the way it's produced, it's really interesting. And I think we even heard that a little bit on this one as we're listening to headphones. Like you can hear some different things happening in the different channels. And it kind of gets, you know, sort of compressed and small and then gets big and loud and you hear stuff going left and right. And and I credit Jeff Lynne for that. And that leads me to my second point here, which is that just recently within the last week, I was having a conversation with my friend Will. And we were talking about how, you know, we both later in life when we were more like teenagers, we both sort of like embraced punk rock and that sort of thing and got into like, you know, alternative college rock, all that stuff, and sort of eschewed a lot of this big production kind of stuff. But later in life, we both have sort of come back to it in a way, not an either or, but an and. And I really appreciate now, we were talking about this, like some music needs to be raw. Some new music needs to have that kind of DIY passion to it. And I think we all appreciate that, right? But there's something to be said for somebody who can go into a studio and have these resources, have this money and the ability to pull in whatever musicians he wants and sort of do whatever he wants and then pull it off. Like, that's a hard thing. I don't think people realize, like, that's, you know, not as easy as it may sound. Yes, you have all these resources available, but with that also comes, you know, more pressure and more, you know, need to really produce something. And so when you can do that and make it still something that's cool like this, which I think it is, it has a great sort of drive to it, but also has a real craftsmanship. There's like little mini swells that go into this song. There's like all these layers of things that happen. There's a vocoder. You know, there's just a lot to this, but then at its heart, it's just a great pop song. You could also imagine somebody just sort of playing it on guitar and, you know, it would hold up there too. So there's so many things I like about this song. You can tell I'm pretty excited. And I you know, I just think it works on a lot of levels. And I also think, as I, you know, started, it also has a timelessness to it that you can play it anytime. You just sort of need a pick me up. And I think it works, right?
Yeah, that's, you know, maybe the most great hidden secret about this song, Jim, is that it just is that mood lifter and you're not really sure why, you know, and maybe it has to do with history and memory and all that other stuff. But man, so well said. And I got to tell you, to me, this is the best song ELO ever did. You maybe might say they were a band that had some, you know, sort of sad songs like Sweet Talking Woman and Telephone Line and, you know, some of that stuff. And there was also a little bit later in their career, Don't Bring Me Down, which
I like that,
you know,
a lot too.
It was like, it's kind of like Mr. Blue Sky Part Two, you know, where he's trying to say like, don't stomp on my buzz. But I don't know. I don't think I realized this till later, Jim, but you said it much better than I will. But to me, Jeff Lynne was always able to take George Martin and the Beatles and like put them together. Like he could produce and he could play, like you were saying. And that to me was always kind of the magic of ELO. So, I'll never get tired of this song.
He definitely, you know, obviously it's very clear inspired by the whole like Sgt. Pepper's era Beatles. But I mean, in a way, he was sort of a Brian Wilson type of character, right?
Right.
You know,
he rolled all that into one. Yeah.
Sort of a singular artist who was just like knew what he wanted to do in the studio and how he could make it work.
Yeah.
Right?
And then, you know, later when he started hanging out with the Traveling Wilburys, that like just showed how much of a genius he was when he was called into that circle with those guys. You know, it was like the elders.
Yeah, totally. Because he was not really a household name. Like those others were huge stars. And it's like, and Jeff Lynne, right? But he's probably the glue held it together in some way. So,
totally. Yeah.
The other thing I did not know until today, and this is so cool. You know, that like cowbell sounding part that clanks in there, right? And it's sort of like
beautiful.
When you're listening to it and you've heard the song enough times, you're sort of like, you know exactly where it hits and you have to like move your hand and, you know, or tap on your steering wheel or whatever. Those four beats. It's not a cowbell, though. It was played by hitting a fire extinguisher.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Amazing.
It has more of a clanking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's got a little bit of a Penny Lane, you know, the fireman rings the bell type sound. Very crisp and clear, which
it's
great.
It's a little more dead sounding. Yes. It doesn't really ring, right?
Right, right. But another thing that like awakens you to that brightness, you know, that you were alluding to.
Yes. So I love this song, Mr. Blue Sky.
Great. And man, what a great call. How did we not choose this one already? I mean, it should have been like one of the top 10 picks off the board.
Now, we're going to go to a listener pick.
Cool.
And it's right from around the same era from Ben Ignacio in Hawaii. Okay?
Nice. Okay.
And Ben writes in and he says, aloha from Hawaii, gents. I thought I'd weigh in on your ongoing Perfect Pop discussion. There have been many great selections. Mine would be My Sharona by The Knack.
Mm.
He said, there have been some good songs that got less airplay that were added to the list of Perfect Pop, but this one was a radio hit that was inescapable in the late 70s when I and you, he says, were preteens. The term pop, of course, comes from the term popular, and My Sharona most certainly was. Then he says, my band of dad rockers, the Dangerous Pistols of Meow Meow, are the only band in Honolulu who dares to cover this deceptively challenging song. And we can attest from the complex clockwork explosion of drum parts to the unforgiving lyrical meter. Do not try to extemporize the phrasing, he says. Not to mention the all-time great guitar solo, that this is no pop pushover, and yet it still manages to knock out of the park the American bandstand requirement that it has a great beat and you can dance to it. It is sly, sexy, and bombastic. And though it's 5 minutes long, everyone thinks it's over too soon. Mahalo for your podcast. You guys are doing a great job. I listen to you every day driving for work or walking my son's dog. Aloha. And that's from Ben Ignacio. So how about that?
That was fantastic. And he also noted at the end, have a great 2015. No, I'm just kidding. I'm making fun of ourselves. Wow, those are great arguments, Jim, and great criteria. I got to say, it's one of those songs. I think we talked about this at one time on our podcast. Like, if you had to just dig into your gray matter and pick songs out, you know, like if you were stranded on a place where there's no music, you could conjure a pretty good version of My Sharona, right? It's so deep in there.
You will never forget the
That's right. You will never. The whole song.
You know, yes, you'll be lying someday in your deathbed and probably humming that song, right? Like,
pull the tubes out. I'm hearing My Sharona.
That's right.
I'm kidding.
Now, he's right. This was a number one hit song.
Yes,
number
it was.
One single from 1979, and it was the Knack's debut single. The album was called Get the Knack, and believe me when I tell you this, Patrick, I also had this on 8-track.
Oh, sweet.
I wish I still had these. I don't have the 8-tracks anymore. Those are long
seriously,
gone.
Man.
Well, let's hear a little bit about this. If there are some people out here who have not heard this song, this is it. All right, here you go. My Sharona. It takes me back to the roller rink.
Yeah, totally,
you know?
Man.
Which, by the way, the roller rink that we had in Toledo, I am not making this up, where I spent many a Saturday, was called Ohio Skate.
Really?
Yes. Isn't that great?
It's a great band name, too.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Ohio
for
Skate.
2020.
So anyway, My Sharona. So Ben mentions that it's actually a really hard song to play. Have you ever tried to play that, Patrick?
No, never have. But, I mean, I can see where he's coming from on that. Jim, you know, interestingly enough, the song opens with a drum riff, right?
Right.
And there are not a
Good
whole
point.
Lot of songs like that, you know? It, like, tattoos the riff on your brain, and then the bass follows and the guitar follows. It's the same riff the whole way, you know? So that's really interesting. And I can see how maintaining that and, you know, slightly shifting the chords, melody, and all that stuff is not easy.
Yeah.
And while you're singing it, because you got to belt it out.
I mean, I think BJ Bonin could probably weigh in on this and tell us how hard this song is, but there is a lot of space in the song. Like, you have to be tight, I think. There's a lot of, everybody has to hit the beat and the notes right at the same time, right?
Right, right. There's definitely a shift that's subtle, you know, and it comes from, like, playing it a lot of times in a row. And also, you know, anytime you got a very small amount of instruments, there's no room to hide. So you got to play your part exactly right. So I can see, you know, totally where that's coming from.
Now, what are your thoughts on the Knack? Because they came up in the late 70s when there was a bit of a power pop movement, and I would put
that's
them
right.
in with those kinds of bands, right? And they were, you know, at least for that debut album, among the most successful, that little sort of mini movement there. But then they kind of flamed out quickly after. So I don't know.
No, and I think you're right, Jim. I think the fact that they were the most successful the quickest was probably their undoing. You know, they like had this number one hit and, you know, had a follow up, and they had this tightly produced album, and they had this image with white shirts and skinny ties and, you know, suits, you know, just media backlash, you know, they're, are they the new Beatles? Or are they trying to be the Beatles or whatever?
Right.
And, you know, that was problematic. And also in the long run, you know, let's be honest, some of the lyrics, you know, were from a different time.
That's right.
That, you know, it doesn't, you know, don't need to get into that either. So I think there were a lot of factors working against the Knack, but man, I mean, like you said, like, who hasn't heard that song and understood it? I mean, it does instantly take you back to a place and time that you can never forget. So,
and there really was a Sharona, by the way.
Yeah, apparently so, right? And I also love the American Bandstand reference. I mean, how can you not imagine the Knack singing that on American Bandstand?
<That's right.
laughs> You know, like, on the stage, Dick Clark, he's either 25 or 58, and he's introducing the Knack. You know, you can totally see it on a Saturday afternoon. So, yeah, what a great call. That's another one.
One last thing I want to bring up to you about this song that I never really thought about until just today when I was reading about it. It has a stutter in it. The ma-ma-ma-ma-ma, right?
That's true.
And so
it ties back to my generation,
don't
too.
Don't you think, in a way?
No, totally.
They had to do that on
purpose,
don't you think?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I don't know a lot of the particulars about the producer and the songwriting and all that stuff. I mean, I know that guys in the Knack had been around for a while and they were trying to make it, but whoever did it really knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys were from L.A., I guess. So.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Well, thank you very much for that, Ben. And sorry it took us, you know, a year and a half to get to it. But we do get there eventually.
Yeah, always.
And we're going to have more listener picks throughout the week. And you're going to have a pick tomorrow, right?
I'm excited, Jim.
Right. I'm very excited about this, too. All right. So it's Perfect Pop Week here on Rockin' the Suburbs. And, of course, we can do this again. It doesn't have to be 18 months from now. So if people want to get in more Perfect Pop picks, which we promise we will do more regularly if people are up for this. But the key is you got to give us, kind of like Ben there, you got to give us a little explanation for why you think the song is perfect. If you just say this song and that's it, forget it. You got to give us a little something to go on here. We want to know why you think it's a perfect song.
Yeah, totally. You can't just say like Web of Ramps by Wingtip Slode and make that, you know, you have to do a lot more than that.
First of all, that's pretty obvious, right? And we want
obviously if you're going to pick one, right? Yeah.
That's like, you know, that's like saying like Auld Lang Syne, you know, is a perfect song,
We may have already talked about it. I don't even know.
But anyway, tell us why you think a song is perfect. You can call. We'd love to hear your voice. 612-440-1984. That number again,
612-440-1984. Right. And please call. I mean, that's going to bump you up to the top of the list.
It is. Or you can email rock@suburbspod.com. Or you can message us or post comments on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. All those at suburbspod. I'm excited about your pick tomorrow, so I got to go to bed early tonight. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Am I still talking?